Well, my name is Chris Stover. I work for the U.S. Forest Service on the Mystic Ranger District, and I am an assistant fire management officer for fuels on the district.
And what are we doing right now? Where are we? We're here in a nice stand of birch trees.
Yeah, we're kind of in an aspen birch bottom out on the Bogus Gym Road, kind of on the northern end of the Mystic District.
And where are we going?
We're going to go and walk up this ridge, and we're going to learn a little about fire history.
So we've come across an old pitch stump here.
Yep, we sure have. And you can see it's got char on it. That tells me it was burned.
Wow.
So it burned a very, very long time ago. How old? I can't tell you for sure. It'd take a little bit more studying than just us walking around out here, but...
But certainly evidence right in front of us that fire...
Right here, we're off the road 30 seconds.
Fire's been a part of the history in the Black Hills for a long time.
How about forever? Always is, always will be. So this is actually kind of a cool spot. We're right on the edge of the Buck Mountain Timber Sale, which was a timber sale to try and combat the mountain pine beetle. So here's actually another piece of wood.
Oh, yeah, it looks like a hollowed out piece of pitch here you're digging out.
Yeah, so this old snag blew down who knows how long ago. You can see that, so this is a fire scar. So you can see this is where the tree actually grew back over where the fire affected it.
So we're looking at what I think is called, is it a cat face scar?
Correct.
Is that right?
That's correct. This would be a cat face.
And you can see these in larger trees all around the hills, some of these older growth pines.
You bet.
Cool.
But I think this is actually a really good example. Okay, so here's one. This shows me that there was a fire right here. Here's another fire right here. Layer was on top of that, right?
Sure.
So there's two. There's three. There's four.
You can look at these fires almost like you look at the tree rings and where how far the fire burned down into the individual tree rings, and you can see the history of fire.
Absolutely. Wow. So, you know, these old trees that experienced fire through millennia became fire hardened, and that's why we have so much heartwood. And these old gray pieces are still laying around out in the woods.
Wow.
We like to call them fire sculpted. And they really do. They look like sculpture, you know, out here in the woods. There's another stump to your left. I believe this was part of the Black Hawk Fire, and I want to say it was 1919.
So
when this happened.
We're seeing in these logs a history of maybe several fires, but we know that in our own history, in our own records, in 1919, this place burned.
That's correct. This area hasn't seen fire in 100 years, effectively since the Forest Service has been around and since we've been suppressing fire. Everybody remembers the Jasper Fire in 2000, Battle Creek 2002. This goes on and on and on, right? Those big fires have big crown fire, big runs of fire, okay? Historically, in the Black Hills, it being a mixed severity forest type, that when we would have fire here, a lot of times that fire would be really low intensity, okay? High frequency, but low intensity, okay? So it would just clean up the stuff that lays out there on the ground. However, we know what kind of pine regeneration we get here, right? We don't need to plant trees here because they regenerate like crazy, okay? Well, if we know that that's happening today, it was probably happening 500 years ago. So we would have had to have had crown fire 1,000 years ago for sure. But would it have been in 1,000, 2,000 acre runs? Probably not. They probably would have been 100 acre, 200 acre runs. Or it would have been a group tree torch of 20 or 30 trees or something along those lines. Because if fire is happening all the time, then you would have different stand densities and different fuel consistencies across the area, right? So some places would be high intensity, lots of places are going to be low intensity because we have fire all the time here.
It would seem that the history is showing us that when you increase the frequency of fire, you decrease, in general, the intensity of fire.
Absolutely. So when you have surface fuel accumulations, like we're looking at right here, because we've stopped frequent fire, this is going to want to burn relatively hot. Plus you have, you know, the stand density that we have in here doesn't allow the heat to escape. Okay. So that's going to allow crown fire to initiate coming up a slope like this. Right. So I think that it's naive for a person to say, well, clearly a fire is not going to happen here. Well, it may not happen in your lifetime. You're right. But there's a pretty good chance it will. Why? Because we just saw all these stumps out here that fire is a frequent visitor to this landscape, right? I mean, we have very few, relatively speaking, very few human-caused fires here in the Black Hills, but we certainly have a lot of lightning. You know, on average, there's something on the order of 130 starts every single summer on the Black Hills. And of those, the lion's share are lightning. So we're certainly not going to stop that part of the fire triangle.
Chris Stover with the Black Hills National Forest, I want to thank you for your time today. Thanks for showing us this today.
Yeah, you bet. I'm really glad that you came out, Mike.
I'm Andrew Tate with the South Dakota Division of Wildland Fire. I'm an urban interface specialist that works throughout the state of South Dakota, but primarily the Black Hills, on fuel reduction projects, trying to make homeowners safe from wildfire.
Thanks, Andrew. I appreciate it. And where are we walking to now? We can hear the wind blowing through the trees. We've got some dry grass kind of crinkling under our foot in this forest. Where are we at?
So we're just west of Rapid City, out Nemo Road, on a private piece of property. It's about 60 acres in size, the specific unit that we're in. And this is in development, is probably the best way to put it. It's a property that's going to be developed into a few home sites here in the near future. But the developer decided before homes were built in here, he wanted to make it fire safe. And what he wanted to do was get the trees thinned, reduce the fuels, that way there's a lessened risk of fire. And then in addition, there's going to be covenants in place to require fire-resistant building materials as well.
Well, that's great. And just down the street here is a bunch of houses. There's more houses up the road, I'm guessing. We're looking down a slope into a ravine. We all know fires like to run up slope.
Absolutely.
But this is a thinned piece of property. So if a fire does come here, it's more likely to stay on the ground. Is that right?
That's correct. It's probably going to be a crown fire once it comes out of the drainages down there because it's very thick surrounding us. It's unmanaged property on just about all sides. And once it does run into this area that's been thinned, the idea is the fire can't burn in the canopy anymore. It's not continuous fuel, so it can't jump from tree to tree. So it'll actually be a surface fire, ground fire that we can manage. We can bring people in here, get some engines in here, crews, whatever it takes, and actually suppress the fire before it gets near the homes.
One thing homeowners love to see in the Black Hills is this nice thick stand of trees for privacy. And I think people may be worried when you say we want to come thin your property to make it fire safe that you're going to destroy that. But yeah. This forest we're standing in is still every bit of forest. Yeah. We can hear the wind blowing through the trees. You still can't see all the way through the canopy, but it's not that kind of thick, overgrown forest that leads
right
to wildfires. Is that right?
It's a healthy forest. People typically think logging or something like that, that they see on a Forest Service project where it's a timber harvest. And that's not what this is. We're removing damaged trees, unhealthy trees. We leave the healthy ones behind. All the good trees, for the most part, stay. And what we're trying to do is just open it up, make it, I want to say, into a natural setting, but everybody sees the thick forest and thinks that's natural. Well, it's probably not based on the research that we've seen. It is in some areas. There's always patches. But fire return intervals in the Black Hills typically meant open stands, some meadows interspersed, and a diverse age of trees. And what we have, for the most part, in populated areas in the hills are single-age stands of trees, and they're not healthy at all. They're just too overgrown. The trees are, you know, 30, 40 years old, and they might be 5 or 6 inches in diameter. And once we start thinning those out, they get more moisture, they can get more sunlight. The trees are going to grow a little bit more. They're going to be healthy. They'll start to branch out more. They'll actually be good-looking pine trees rather than just a pole with a few needles on top. And in addition, we start getting more wildlife in. We'll see more grasses on the ground. So there are all kinds of benefits.
This kind of treatment to thin a forest is quite expensive if a landowner tries to take it on his or her own. But there are a lot of programs through the state, through the federal government, through other agencies out there that are working to help landowners pay for some of this. Is that right?
Yes, there are programs available. We've got two cost share programs available. They're both funded through federal grants. We've got the 100% cost share program where we approach homeowners in specific areas that are high hazard and high concern to us. And that's what this one here is. We've got funding through quite a large corridor along Nemo Road and several areas throughout the hills. And then our 50% program where we reimburse landowners for the work that's done. So they choose the contractor, they oversee the work being done to our specifications, and then we reimburse it once it meets our requirements at the end.
And there are thousands of houses on the eastern slope of the Black Hills and all around the
yes
Black Hills. The hills are one of the most populated natural forest areas in the country, I understand,
yes,
with most private land. What can those homeowners, individual homeowners, do who have fire out here, even who have cleared around their house? What can they do right around their house? What are the rules that they need to follow if they want to survive a wildfire?
Some of the simple stuff is picking up debris, basic yard maintenance, spring, summer, things like that. Start picking up dead branches, rake needles, rake leaves, mow grass. That's the big one right there. We've seen some pretty extreme fires already this year just from dead grass. You know, if we're getting flame lengths in the, you know, 6-8 foot range just off of grass, you can imagine how dry that is and what some other fuels would do once they're in there. Like out here, we've got some logs that are laying around as well, and that just puts off a lot of heat. If that was next to a home, it could easily damage the home. So if there's firewood, move it out. We typically like to see it about 30 feet away. Clean out around propane tanks. That's one that most people don't think of. They're kind of out of sight, out of mind, but it's definitely a hazard, and it can put a lot of heat up against the home as well. They're typically located close. If it's an option, bury them. That's a great idea. And then you start getting into stuff like decorative landscaping. Simple things like flower beds. Most people want a little flower bed around their home, so they put some mulch in it. Well, mulch is very flammable. There's quite a few studies out of the University of Nevada that show different flammabilities of mulch, and pine straw is pretty common in other parts of the country. It's not so common around here because we have it laying everywhere, so people don't think to put it down already. But just typical ground-up wood mulch is pretty flammable, and it'll hold heat. It'll catch an ember from a fire. So what we like to say is put a little rock next to the foundation, out away from the siding. That way there's a little bit of a barrier if the mulch does catch on fire. Or if you're set on mulch, put a drip irrigation system in, something like that, that keeps the mulch moist, and then it's more resistant to fire.
Andrew Tate, I want to thank you for joining us here today out on this beautiful afternoon in the Black Hills.
Absolutely. It's a perfect time to come out and look around and see what we've been doing and share it with everybody.
Lieutenant Tim Weaver.
I want to thank you for your time this afternoon.
Thank you.
I see right up there, that's the Dinosaur Park. I can see the dinosaur sticking up here and the flag on top of Dinosaur Park. 30 seconds that way is downtown Rapid City.
Right.
And right in front of us is this steep gully going up Skyline Drive that's full of brush.
Right.
And anyone who has ever seen a wildfire on TV can imagine what one would do if it came into this little gully right here. You're trying to mitigate that problem, is it, right here today? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, and basically what you just described is Rapid City. You know, we've got severe wildfire areas within a stone's throw of either large neighborhoods, big housing developments, or downtown Rapid City. In the case of the Skyline Drive Hogback here, it splits the town, and there's a lot of terrain up here that's, you know, for all intents and purposes, pretty big terrain. And so wildland fire activity on this type of terrain, because of the draws and the steepness of the slopes and the heavy overloading of fuel in here, is going to be a lot more severe than we want in the center of the city. And so we're trying to mitigate that threat, and we lessen the potential damage to neighboring properties, homeowners, and the like.
You speak of homeowners, and if I look up this gully, I see a very nice house perched right here at the top of the gully. Preventing wildfires in that case, or reducing their severity with this kind of treatment, is much cheaper than fighting them down the road.
Correct. Just for instance, in one fuel mitigation project that we did on the west side of town, we protected approximately about $24 million worth of private property directly, and the total project cost was about $80,000. So the return on investment is huge. It's really short money. And the added bonus is you are potentially limiting, you know, the fire behavior that we may face, which is going to help save firefighters' lives potentially, or it reduces the taxation on the fire department when a big fire event happens. You have to remember that when a big event happens like that, there's a lot happening at one time. And so, you know, we're dealing with the fire event itself, we're dealing with the ember storm, which is potentially lighting many spot fires ahead of the fire front in other areas of the city, potentially lighting homes on fire at the same time. So we could potentially have a situation where we're quickly overwhelmed, and all these activities are trying to keep the fire behavior to a point to where that does not happen.
And you mentioned homeowners and the possibility of embers. Say if a fire came up through this gully we're standing on, embers, I assume, could blow right over the top of the Hogback and be over in West Rapid, potentially even. Homeowners around their homes, even in Rapid City, need to be aware of that. And we've heard time and time again, homeowners need to protect the area around their own homes to make sure that there aren't places where things around their homes could start on fire and then catch the home on fire.
You know, the general rule of thumb is we like to say that burning embers can travel about a mile in front of a severe fire front. In some cases, more. In some cases, less. But that's a good rule of thumb. And if you look at Rapid City, if you look at the Carriage Hills, Hogback, the Skyline Drive area, the Cabot Hill area, the M Hill area, they're all strategically placed in the city to where, in the event of a large fire, all the properties that are in that 1 mile buffer zone downwind of the main fire front potentially have an issue with burning embers or the ember storm that will be produced by that fire front. And so, you know, you're looking at a large, large portion of Rapid City, really, any way the wind's blowing. And so, you're right. I mean, even those folks that are within a mile of, say, one of these areas, they may be in a pretty urbanized neighborhood, but if they have a cedar shake roof or flammable shrubbery next to their house or any other of those types of issues, they could potentially have a home ignition from that fire that's 3/4 of a mile or even a mile away from them.
And these things aren't too far-fetched. We've all seen it happen in the Black Hills. We've lost homes in Colorado, for example, I believe in 2012. The fires there on the Front Range near Colorado Springs were just horribly horrific, tragic events. You know, you can hear the stuff crackling under our feet now. It's April. This is just dry as heck.
Yeah, it's very, very dry. We haven't received the moisture that we need for sure. And, you know, those two fires in Colorado in 2012 and 13 each stole the record for the, you know, most damaging wildfire in Colorado history. And so, you know, the Waldo Canyon fire right in Colorado Springs and the Black Forest fire just north of there. And in both of those cases, there was a large, large number of houses that were destroyed by burning embers, not necessarily destroyed by direct impact from the fire front. And in both cases, large subdivisions burned down from structure to structure ignition directly related to the ember storm. So it's well proven. It happens all the time. It's not rocket science. I mean, this is stuff that happens on many, many fires throughout the American West every summer. And so we just try and address those issues the best we can and try and educate. And it's kind of a multifaceted problem. And for a homeowner to really, truly do the most he can, he's got to kind of do everything and address the big fire front problem, the surface fire threat, and the burning ember threat. But if they do that, then they really have a good chance to drastically reduce the effects of a wildland fire on their property. You got to remember that wildland fire is a natural phenomenon, but it's the easiest natural disaster to mitigate against. You know, you can't control how much water is going to come out of the sky. You can't control how big the hailstones are going to be. You can't control how hard the wind's going to blow. But you can, through fuel modification, affect how the fire will burn on the landscape. And that's something that people need to remember.
Lieutenant Tim Weaver with the Rapid City Fire Department, I want to thank you for your time this afternoon.